Hi, this is John Amundson. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented to you by the Psychologists Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that's timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I wanted to let in with an Eastern Orthodox hymn because I want to speak a little bit about a controversy that's emerging in the States and the use of information and data to try to assist people in resolving this. As we've seen, the turn to the right and the turn to fundamentalism in politics in the United States, Attorney General William Barr has made it really clear. He says, when we become secular, everything goes to hell. In other words, he wants to preserve a sanctity relative to a particular religious faith, Christianity. And he says, unless we preserve that, we're going to be in big trouble. So I take this from a website called Ethics and Psychology, and they have all sorts of really cool stuff, and they were trying to speak about his comment and his attempt to craft policy of sort that would support this preservation and enhancement of the sacred in the sense of being Christian. Slavoj Žižek, the Slovenian philosopher who, if you haven't read him, you ought to, he has this really great quote. He says, anytime the word sanctity is expressed, soon blood will flow. It seems that's the case because in the research that they did on this site, the most secular countries in the world fare much better on every measure of peace, prosperity, and societal well-being. Infant mortality, life expectancy, educational attainment, economic prosperity, freedom is defined by the individuals in that society, absence of corruption than the religious countries. For example, he said the highest murder rates are in places like Jamaica, Honduras, Guatemala, Colombia, and Brazil. And they, when they do scales and ratings regarding religiosity, they're all extremely religious. And countries with lower murder rates, such as Iceland, Canada, Slovenia, Norway, and the Netherlands, are among the most secular. I did a podcast, probably 3-4 years ago, where we were looking at religious fundamentalism and how that is rated based upon practices of given societies. And the United States came out very, very high, as a matter of fact, because it was at a time when the first Islamophobic comments were being made about these fundamentally religious people. But based upon objective rating scales, the U.S. was right up there. Singapore and the Czech Republic are less religious, the least religious nations on earth. Brazil and the Philippines are among the most God-worshipping, and the latter's murder rates are over 10 times higher. Japan is 80 times lower than El Salvador's murder rate, and El Salvador has declared itself a Catholic nation. And Barr's position is there must be a supreme transcendent being in order for a country to truly be moral and be safe. And the data seems to say otherwise. In the United States, every major societal well-being, poverty, STD, driving under the influence, legal charges, etc., those rates are much higher. They fare much worse in the states that are considered more religious. The highest gun violence and murder rates are among the most religious, as well as those other issues of poverty, legal charges, etc. The most religious states: Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Missouri, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Arkansas, and those are the most religious states in the United States. And New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, New York, Washington, Massachusetts, and Minnesota, they have the lowest gun and violence and murder rates. So the argument here is against this idea of a single sort of final action, and it points to other things we've spoken about where people are considered to be much higher on sanctity, that is, holding certain principles and ways and beliefs as being kind of untouchable. But anyway, I wanted to introduce this because I think it's useful for social science to weigh in on these sorts of measures and assist in dispelling myths that may have an emotional appeal, but may also ultimately lead to the exact opposite of what those who express them purport. Pivoting a little bit under the rhetoric, catchy terms to impress friends with, there's a article, it was in Scientific American, and it was a review of, well, actually, it was Scientific American picked up on it, and it was an article out of the New York Times. The reason I'm pausing, I think it was a something that was written in Scientific American and then taken into the New York Times. But anyway, the Times grabbed this, and it was really a very quick, popular article on the concept of dopamine fasting. It's just a clever way to speak of a lot of the stuff that's already happening with yoga, mindfulness, meditation, whatever. But it's the idea of quieting through Vipassana Buddhist techniques, through chanting, fixing one's gaze, whatever. Whatever it is, and translating those esoteric practices into a quieting of the dopamine system. We live in a hyperactive society, and we're always on the go, and the dopamine system has to do with drive, drive, reward. There's lots of manifestations of that, and dopamine is a very mysterious substance that interventionists are very cautious to mess with because it is connected with so many things. But there is utility in our clinical practice and in the lives of many people to engage in dopamine fasting. So with that in mind, let's use some dopamine fasting music to march us out.